Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is a Football Friday presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown. Every game, every bet for real sports fans. You're locked in to Grant and Danny. Trying to time up a segment with Jonathan Allen at some point here, who's at the facility today as he leaves. If we can work it out, hopefully we'll get him on to discuss the hiring of both Ron Rivera and new defensive coordinator Jack Del Rio. But the good teams get to keep playing football, and the playoffs start tomorrow. We wanted to put the spotlight on game one of four this weekend, the Bills and the Texans, and we will talk to a member of the media corps covering both of those two teams this segment. Starting with Buffalo, the Bills have not won a playoff game since they beat the Dolphins in 95. Forrest Gump won the Academy Award that year. They're trying to end a 24-year drought, and Sal Capaccio joins us now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline on the beat and on the sideline in Buffalo. Can educate us on the Bills. Do people expect, despite being three-point underdogs, Sal, that this will be the year that that drought ends?
I wouldn't know about expecting. I don't know if I'd say that, but I think people give this team a legitimate chance, and of all the teams they could have played in the AFC, I think this is the team that most felt the Bills would match up the best against. Now, they did beat Tennessee earlier in the year. That was before the switch to Ryan Tannehill, but the teams that give the Bills the most troubles are usually those that, you know, pound the football pretty physical. Even when the Redskins came to Buffalo, you saw that a little bit. They had trouble with the running game early on. That's not really who the Texans are, so I think this matchup is much more in favor of the Bills.
So, Sal, for me, the key is what the worst unit for each team is going to do, right? You saw Houston get gashed a couple times by that the aforementioned Tennessee team. But for me, it's this offense. Can this offense make enough plays? Can Josh Allen make a couple nice throws? Can you break something against the Houston team that may be vulnerable to the big play? That, to me, is the huge question. Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, you look at the last 7 weeks, though, pretty incredible numbers against the Houston Texans on the ground. They've given up an average of 169 yards rushing over the last 7 weeks, 5.6 yards a carry. You know, the Bills are a good running team. They'd much prefer to keep the ball on the ground, run the football with Devin Singletary, who's becoming an outstanding rookie. He has an outstanding rookie season. Frank Gore, obviously, going to be a Hall of Famer. And then Josh Allen with his legs as well. I think all three of them could factor in. That's the way the Bills would love to control this thing. And, you know, looking at the Texans' defense and their weakness, I think that that is the way that they should go about it at first.
You mentioned Josh Allen, Devin Singletary, and I would throw John Brown into the equation. All three of those guys sat in Week 17, should have fresh legs going into this matchup. Singletary averaged 5 yards per carry this season out of Florida Atlantic. We know a thing or two about random Florida Atlantic running backs playing well. Alfred Morris did it as a rookie here in Washington. Let's zone in on Josh Allen, though. The numbers are decent. 2-1 touchdown to pick ratio, rating in the mid-80s, threw for 3,000 yards, and he's such a playmaker with his feet. What is the feeling on the 23-year-old after his sophomore season in Buffalo?
Lots of progress from last year to this year, but especially really throughout this year. You know, you guys, you go back to the first 4 weeks, and Josh Allen was doing all the same things he did last year, which was throwing the ball up kind of haphazardly, making poor decisions, trying to play hero ball, so to speak, you know, where he thought he had to do everything, and that really got him in trouble. And he had, I believe it was 5 interceptions over the first 4 weeks of the season, maybe even 6. But since then, 3 interceptions since Week 4. He is really taking care of the football. He's made great, smart decisions. He had a stretch of 5 straight games without throwing an interception, and that's really been the difference. The growth in him from the coaching staff teaching him to him really having, I'd say, introspection and realizing that he can't do those kinds of things. He can't just try to do everything himself, and he has to stay within himself. Now, granted, sometimes that still comes out once in a while, but it hasn't killed this team. And, you know, he's actually been very, very good in the fourth quarter this year. He's the only regular NFL starter to not throw an interception this entire season in the fourth quarter.
Wow. One of the reasons I'm fascinated by Josh Allen, and we're getting insight on him from Sal Capaccio, who joins us, who covers the Bills. He has the rocket arm, and accuracy issues was kind of the knock, which we've seen from Dwayne Haskins here as a kid quarterback. He's got a strong arm, but he misses a lot of open guys. How much has that changed this year as Allen improved his accuracy?
You know, he has, I think accuracy is such an interesting buzzword. We've debated it here for 2 years now because of Josh Allen. And, you know, it's often, too often, I think, by people measured by completion percentage. It's not. Accuracy is a whole bunch of things. You know, putting it ball where it's supposed to be, you have to factor in receivers and routes and things like that with completion percentage. I'd say he has improved his accuracy. And, in fact, he has actually been one of the more accurate quarterbacks in all the mid-range to short stuff, which is really where his issue was coming out of college. But the funny part is, he can't hit anything deep now, guys. It's weird. Like, they went the entire season, and finally, the last week or the second to last week, they finally hit a deep ball for a touchdown to John Brown. And a couple others that were a little bit deeper before that, but that's been the issue this year is the deep ball with the rocket arm. He can't connect on those for some reason, but he's been really much better, much more accurate on the intermediate to shorter throws. And I'd say a lot of that's from coaching. They really worked with him on that. They got him to change his mindset on what he needs to do. And I would think that with Dwayne Haskins, in your case, that's got to be the same thing. That's got to be the focal point in the offseason. I like Ron Rivera, by the way, as a head coach. He comes, he's the guy that Sean McDermott worked under for many years here in Buffalo. And I think we have a good one in Sean McDermott. And he learned a lot from Ron Rivera.
At Sal Sports on Twitter, give our guest Sal Capaccio a follow, giving you all information about the Bills. Let's get into that defense, which is just nasty. I mean, it seemed our buddy, the ageless one, Lorenzo Alexander, nice veteran influence, but seems like pressure comes from everywhere. Everyone does their job. This is a really tough team to move the football against. How do they match up with that Texans offense, in your opinion?
Yeah, what the Texans do, when I go back to talking about matchups and why Bills fans are liking this one more than others, what the Texans do well is what the Bills shut down well, and that is the big play. The Texans really rely on the big play from Deshaun Watson to DeAndre Hopkins, Will Fuller. Well, first of all, Will Fuller might not play. We're hearing it's a stretch. He's going to play with the groin. And then the Bills have an elite cornerback in Tre'Davious White who will match up one-on-one with DeAndre Hopkins, and that's going to be a great, fascinating matchup to watch. But the X factor is Deshaun Watson. We know that. You know, he can come up with a play or two every game to just turn the game. And that's what they do well, and I think the Bills, for money, they have the best, to me, overall secondary in the league. They are the number two defense in points. They only allowed 16 points a game, but they're the best secondary in the league as far as keeping everything in front of them and not allowing the big play, and I think that's what really helps them in this matchup.
Sal, thanks so much for the time and the insight on the Bills. We really appreciate it.
Anytime, guys. Thank you.
Thank you, buddy.
Let's look at the other side of this matchup, the Houston Texans with Aaron Wilson, who's covered that team for years and writes about the Texans for the Houston Chronicle. Aaron, correct me if you think I'm wrong here, and thanks for joining us on Grant and Danny, but I look at the Texans as a Super Bowl team in terms of talent. You got Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins, J.J. Watt, who's coming back after missing 8 games, yet they didn't win back-to-back games all year long. What is missing? This is a team that should be able to make a deep run this year, and it doesn't seem like nationally they're getting much of a chance to do that.
Right, yeah, they have all the talent, and they've got a very deep team. The issues have been mistakes lately. I think that's why people are concerned about them heading into the playoffs. Deshaun Watson, as good as he is, has 5 interceptions in his last 3 starts. He's made some poor decisions with the football. They are a team that has some drive-killing tendencies. Laremy Tunsil's a great tackle, but he's got a bad case of offsides. He leads the NFL with a dozen false starts, leads the NFL in penalties. So there's some key things that happen. They've gotten away from the run-pass option, some of the creative things that kind of mirror a little bit of what Baltimore tries to do and does so well. But they haven't really run any of those plays in a month. If you go back and look, I wrote about this week, the New England game was the last time really that they had anything getting Duke Johnson out into space, lots of touches for him, mismatches against linebackers. And I think the offense has regressed. The defense, they should get a shot in the arm from J.J. Watt, but Deshaun Watson, all those guys have to play better football. It's been a while since they've had a good game.
Aaron, I love Deshaun Watson. He's one of my favorite players in the league. He's tough as nails. I think he's like a Madden creative player when you start making up quarterbacks. I think he's great. The only thing that I point to, though, and you could probably give us more insight on this, he's just, in terms of production, a different player with and then versus without Will Fuller. Do you think Will Fuller is going to play? But B, talk about some of the differences in Watson's production.
No, I don't think he's going to play. I watched him yesterday, and I was told by multiple sources that he is unlikely to play, that it wouldn't really probably be safe for him to play in terms of not aggravating the groin injury that he suffered against Tampa Bay. It's more of a 3-week injury, and he would have a decent chance of next week and not even be a lock for the divisional round, but yeah, I will be surprised to see him play. If he attempts it, if they have him active, I think he's at high risk of hurting himself again. So they are really on the fence about whether it's a good idea for him to play. And yeah, they're much different. They are 8-3 when he's in the lineup, and then they're 2-3 with the other games. So you look at, you know, the situation, and I think they really rely on him. Kenny Stills isn't the same as Will Fuller. You can't just plug him in and say, okay, you're going to have the same production. Fuller is a good all-around receiver. He's a really dangerous deep threat. He complements DeAndre Hopkins very well. And DeAndre Hopkins is going to be up against Tre'Davious White, who hasn't allowed a touchdown pass all year. Last year, Hop beat him for a touchdown, but only caught two passes overall. Other than that, it was zone coverage, his other three catches. So, yeah, I think that it's a tough matchup. And the Texans, for them, at least they're at home. I think that helps them a lot. And they rested guys last week, so they've been a little fresher. And I think they understand where they've come up short and some of their deficiencies, but they've got to come up with a better strategy. The play calling has been stale lately. You know, I'm not being all doom and gloom, but it has not been the team on paper that we're talking about. The reality over the past month, since December 1st, since that good game against the defending Super Bowl champs, hasn't been that way. So they're not entering the playoffs with a lot of momentum. Maybe they'll get it together for the playoffs, though.
Aaron Wilson covers the Texans in Houston. 5 of 8 seasons they've made the playoffs. They've yet to get to a conference championship game. And Bill O'Brien is in his 6th year now as head coach. We've heard a lot about pressure on Mike Zimmer to win this weekend, even though the Vikings are up against a huge juggernaut in the Saints. What about O'Brien? If they lose, let's say they don't play a good game and they lose handily this weekend, any issue, pressure for him? They got outscored this year. Still made the playoffs at 10-6, but they're -7 in point differential. Or is he safe?
He's completely safe. Take it to the bank. Bill O'Brien will be their coach regardless of what happens against the Bills. And they might win this game. I actually picked them to win it. But, yeah, he has all the power. They like what he's done as a boss in terms of engineering trades, Laramie Tunsil, Kenny Stills, Carlos Hyde, Duke Johnson, all of that without a general manager. Guess what? He doesn't have a title, but he's a general manager. And a coach.
Right.
As much power as anybody short of Bill Belichick.
Wow.
He's not going anywhere.
Aaron, appreciate the insight, man. And I actually want to see more of Deshaun Watson. So actually kind of rooting for Houston to win this game.
I think he's going to play better. I think he's been really accountable about his turnovers. I think he's going to play a little bit differently. And he's feeling a lot better. He's off the injury report. So you might see more of the vibrant Texans this weekend than we had up against a really good Buffalo defense, though. Ton of pass rushers, Ed Oliver, all those guys. It's going to be a tough game.
Aaron,
Thanks, buddy.
Enjoy the weekend.
Thank you.
Aaron Wilson, Sal Capaccio, helping us break down Bills, Texans, kickoff, 4:35 East time. Game will be on ESPN and ABC. The Texans are 3-point favorites at home in this game as the division champions from the AFC South. I also think the Texans have more upside, like at their best. And the reason I bring that up is I would give them a better chance probably to pull off an upset next round. Buffalo matches up better with Baltimore if that was the game, but I think Houston would give Kansas City, as an example, more of a game.
Mm.
And I, like Deshaun Watson just being great, we saw it all the way to a national championship at Clemson, has the ability to take over one of these playoff games.
I think it's a good point by you. The on-paper design or the matchup, it would favor one team over the other, but that dude is so good that he's capable of one of those transcendent performances we talk about.
Cannot wait. Bills-Texans gets the postseason started 4:35 tomorrow. Titans-Patriots, your nightcap at 8:15 on Saturday. And then the NFC takes center stage with a doubleheader on Sunday. Vikings in New Orleans to play the Saints. Seahawks in Philly to take on the Eagles. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Speaking of the Eagles in the NFC East, every other team in the division will have a new head coach next year. The Dallas Cowboys making that official sometime today, apparently. But the news came out last night that Jason Garrett is out. We'll react to that next on G&D on the Fan. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. A Football Friday presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown will turn into a Caps Friday as well when Craig Lachlan joins us coming up. Bottom of the hour in about 15 minutes at 11:30. Looking forward to talking to Locker. A lot to chew on with him, but the Caps have struggled a bit of late. Back-to-back losses in regulation, first time all season. Losers of three of their last four. This is the best team in hockey, circuit to circuit to this point. But maybe they're looking ahead to their bye week, their break, the All-Star break all coming up later this month. The holidays may have taken their toll, but they got a lot of division games coming up. And one of two things is going to happen.
Uh-huh.
They're going to separate themselves from teams like Pittsburgh and the Islanders and the Carolina Hurricanes, where they play again tonight, or they'll allow those teams to get back into the race. So we'll talk to Lachlan about that. Jason Garrett is apparently going to be out. Ed Werder broke the story for ESPN last night. Do you have any feel or understanding of how this process has worked? I keep hearing that everyone's saying that it was important to Jason Garrett that he be very respectable and respectable to Jerry Jones, that he was respectful and respectable to Jason Garrett. Okay, I guess. They haven't officially said he's out yet. His contract expires January 14th. Charles Robinson of Yahoo Sports yesterday said he met in exit interviews with a bunch of his assistant coaches yesterday on Thursday, and he acted as if they might be back and he might be back, like he didn't know yet. There was supposed to be a third meeting for the third time in 3 days with Jerry that never happened. It's the weirdest coaching vacancy that this we all know is going to be vacant.
It's so odd.
Ever. Like, there's no way Jason Garrett's back, but we're all pretending over the last 72 hours like maybe he would be. And right now, Werder's saying that Jerry has made the decision, but it's not public yet,
still
and he hasn't
happened.
Come out and said it. Do you think he's just going to let the shot clock run out till January 14th?
It's my only thought as to what this is. Right? Is you're letting the guy go with some dignity. You're not going to fire him, whatever it is, you know, 11 days before his contract was going to expire anyway. Maybe that changes something. I mean, you're moving on from the guy, right? Aren't you? Isn't that what this is? Or are you trying to, are you maybe, and here's the other theory. I don't buy this. I'm just trying to figure this out, right? Working back from something I don't get. Maybe as Jerry's doing his, you know, he takes Cowboys One or whatever his stupid plane's called. And he's, you know, flying to Oklahoma to meet with Lincoln Riley or flying to Baylor to meet with Matt Rhule or whoever the hell else he's going to throw money at. Maybe if he gets told no, pipe down, go away enough times from enough of the sexy candidates, he might go back to Jason Garrett. I mean, I'm not buying that. I'm trying to figure this out. I don't get this. I don't get what the problem is. If you don't want him to be your head coach, a reasonable thing, by the way, for old Jarrah, then tell him that. Take his key card. Like everybody else that's happened, that's gotten, you know, frog marched out of a building, do right. It. Either do it or don't.
I also don't view the let's hang on to this guy as long as possible as the respectful move, to your point.
Yeah, you twist it in the wind. You feel respected?
Like, people were upset when the Panthers fired Ron Rivera in season when they did. There's a really good writer who I've read a lot of stories on Rivera from recently for The Athletic. I think her name's Jordan Rodriguez or something like that. And one of the things I read that she wrote was basically this piece on why did they fire Ron Rivera when they did? This was weird. They should have let him coach out the rest of the year. I think there's a misconception that if you get rid of a coach immediately, like let's say it's Jay Gruden in week 5 or Ron Rivera in week 11 or whatever that was, that's quote-unquote disrespectful. You're firing him before the year's end. I disagree with that completely. If you know that guy is out, the most respectful, decent thing you can do is fire them. You use the phrase twist in the wind. I like that. Remember the Jim Zorn press conferences when we all knew he was fired?
Oh, yeah.
And he just had to keep wearing it at the podium?
Was that the most respectful thing possible?
How about Freddie Kitchens, by the way? Remember when Freddie Kitchens over and over and over again would go to the podium and he had to keep dealing with this press conference question one after another about his future? And we all knew he was going to be fired, right. And he wasn't fired yet. Well, this is better than that to me. Put them out of their misery. Let them walk. The keeping Jason Garrett around as long as possible thing just doesn't fly for me.
Not me either. Again, I don't get what they're doing. I'm coming up with hypotheses like everybody else.
Garrett is going to be out, according to Ed Werder, and there will be three new coaches in the NFC East. The Cowboys will have one, the Giants will have one, and the Redskins have hired Ron Rivera. Joining us right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline to discuss that is John Allen. Very talented defensive lineman and a first-round pick who's become a leader in the locker room for Washington. John, it's great to have you back on the show. Really appreciate it. You were at the press conference yesterday. You've met with Ron Rivera already. What are your thoughts on the new hire?
I'm excited. It's definitely a new opportunity for us to really get this thing turned around. I love the message he's preaching. I really feel like this is going to be good for this organization and the culture. Now, I mean, not putting no expectations on it. I'm just upholding the standards that I always help myself to go from there.
So when you hear, you know, Ron Rivera and then Jack Del Rio only a couple days later, sounds like there's a bit of a system change in store for you guys. What does that mean for you specifically, Jonathan, as a guy that's established himself in this league in a different defense? What are these changes going to be like for you?
You know, I don't know what the changes are going to be like, but at the end of the day, defensive line is defensive line. So I'm not overly worried about anything. I'm just focused on what I got to do to get better and meet with Coach Jack to get the new scheme down. But at the end of the day, playing defensive line is about being physical and beating people up regardless of the thing.
What was your first conversation like? I know Del Rio was there yesterday as well, and you've probably gotten a chance to chat with him. What has that been like so far? A lot of Redskins fans, just so you know, they're pumped about Rivera being hired, but I think they're equally as excited about Del Rio because we've been waiting for a real quality defensive coordinator with good credentials to be hired for a long time.
I mean, it's definitely exciting, but like I said, I don't want to put any expectations because expectation just leads to disappointment. So we're just going to go out there and we're just going to work it. It's a process. Not like all of our problems are going to be fixed overnight. So, you know, for the Redskins fans out there, I'm happy you're excited. I'm glad you're excited. I'm excited too. Let's just see what happens. I'm not saying don't be excited, but, you know, I don't believe in all that excess hype because it never works out. So as a team and as a player, we're just trying to focus on what we got to do to be great and really move along in this process.
I like it. John Allen reacting to some of the big news of the last 24 hours with us here on Grant and Danny. I know you just said you're not sure about the scheme and all that yet, but could you educate us a little bit? Alabama, do you guys run exclusively a 4-3? I mean, you've done that before, right?
So at Bama, we ran a 4-3, but what people don't understand is just because we're going from a 3-4 to 4-3, there's not that much change. Last year, I think we ran 70% sub, which is a 4-3. So we played a lot of 4-3 last year. So it's not like there's something that we've never done before. Like, you play a 4-3 your whole life. Everyone plays a 4-3 and a 3-4 at times.
So when you say, moments ago, you said we got to do what we need to do to fix, you know, some of the problems and to try to be great. What do you see as the problems? What do you think held you guys back really this year, but in addition last year, that you didn't get to the place you guys wanted to go?
Just consistency and just accountability. You know, people always want to blame the coaches and blame the coordinator, blame the play caller. But at the end of the day, if the players don't execute it, it really doesn't matter what the coach says or does. So the onus falls on us to do it. And the coach can put you in the best position. But if you don't do your job and do it at a high and effective level, it really doesn't matter. So as players, we got to step up, but we have to take charge, and we have to say enough about to do the right thing and get the thing turned around. And definitely Coach Rand, Coach Del Rio is going to help us out a lot, but the onus has to fall on the players.
What I like so much about you, John, you know, coming from Alabama, being a local guy, you were around and watched the Redskins for years. You were in such a winning culture. It just seems like you don't want to play this whole losing every year thing. And even right now, you're like, look, I don't want to talk a whole lot about how great things are going to be. Let's just go prove it. But there are guys, as you know, who were here for 9 or 10 years and maybe made the playoffs once. It just seems like you're not interested in playing that game. And I like the way you kind of talk about these things publicly as a leader in the locker room. How much of that is the culture you come from in Alabama, or how much is just you personally? You could have gone any school and felt that way.
I mean, I honestly think it's a little bit of both. I mean, coming from a military background, my dad, the Allen family, were not losers. And then on top of that, you go to a university like Alabama, you have Coach Saban, who's not a loser. You just don't tolerate it. So, I mean, obviously, no one's accepting losing here. No one wants it. But it's easy to get lulled by it. And I fight it, too. But you have to always be uncomfortable. That's the big motto of my life that Coach Saban taught me. Uncomfortability breeds growth. So the more uncomfortable you are, the more you'll grow. The minute you get comfortable in XL, you're screwed.
John Allen with us here on Grant and Danny. And you mentioned this as well, that you want to continue to improve. What are some of the things you want to work on? Because I see some pretty good production from a really good football player here early on in your career. What are some of the things that you want to do better?
I just want to continue and grow in all aspects to be more consistent, more dominant. I mean, there's not really one aspect where I'm like, I got to focus on this. But as an overall football player, I just want to be more consistent day in and day out, week in and week out.
Last thing I've got for you, John, you guys drafted, you're in 2017 first rounder, Payne 2018, Ioannidis is a Pro Bowl alternate who's broken out. You know, Tim Settle looks like a legit prospect. A lot of people say there's way too many good players on this D-line to take a guy like Chase Young at number two. But what's your take on that?
Thank God I'm not in a position where I have to make that call. It's definitely not an easy call. So So kind of like I said before, I'm not really focused on that. If we draft them, great. If we don't, you know, it is what it is. It's a business. So I'm not really focused on who we're drafting. I'm just focused on what I got to do to help the team be successful.
Appreciate you joining us, man, and you know, Happy New Year to you. Even though Dan Snyder said Happy Thanksgiving yesterday,
also Happy Thanksgiving,
happy holidays, all the whole holiday season.
What did you do for Thanksgiving yesterday, John?
Oh man, I don't know.
That was funny. Thanks for the time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, buddy.
I appreciate it.
All right, congrats on the new coach, the new coordinator, and best of luck turning things around. Cool to squeeze him in as he leaves the facility today.
Absolutely, man.
John Allen on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Next, let's talk to Craig Lachlan, one of the voices of Caps hockey, who's synonymous with the Caps in this town, and we are thrilled to announce he'll be a regular with us throughout the rest of the regular and postseasons for the Capitals. Our first installment of the Lachlan Report is next right here on The Fan. Craig Lachlan's going to be joining us for the rest of the hockey season, presented
nice.
By American Standard Heating and Air. Find your local contractor at midatlanticcomfort.com. Locker, you were on Grant and Danny. This will be your home on 106.7 The Fan the rest of the way. We're excited about it, buddy.
Yeah, so am I, fellas. I'm pumped up. I can't wait. No tough questions, though, okay? No real toughies.
Well, we'll save the tough questions for the postseason. We'll just softball our way through the rest of the year because the boys have a big lead. But there is one prerequisite to getting this interview done. We need a Craig Lachlan bobblehead with Joe B. How do we get our hands on those?
I am going to get you guys one. I will send you one.
Yeah.
They're actually down at the studio, Grant. Grant, you can grab one down at the
Where
studio.
Where are they? Honestly, this isn't a bit. Okay. I've been asking for weeks. They don't have them, apparently. Where are they?
They have them. They're hidden in boxes because everybody wants one. But I tell you what, you go there and tell them you want a Locker bobblehead. I gave you the okay. We'll cut it in half.
All right.
So, right, so you, want, yeah.
you
yeah,
can
you
have
go.
Mine, and Danny can have Joe's.
Boom.
You know
I
what
like
I would
it.
Like? Obviously, the Locker bobblehead would be awesome. I want a set of your like Master Symphony game notes that you don't need anymore. I want like one of those
yeah,
old giant copies.
You got it. Okay.
Do you toss
you
those after every game, Locker?
Notes. Yeah, I do. Brand new ones every night. He can have my ones from tonight.
Boom.
Page.
That's what I want. If you, we had the
and
pleasure
laminated. I'll laminate them for you.
Oh, I get so excited.
You can keep those.
We had the pleasure of getting into the booth once, watching you and Joe B. just artists at work. What you guys do is so good. And everybody associates Capitals hockey with you guys, and I'm not even doing a bit. It's serious. That's what I think of. The notes that Locker has, it's like what's the movie about the genius? It's like Goodwill Hunting on the mirror, man. It's like so huge. It's unbelievable. I was blown away by it.
You know, I go through 4 dozen Sharpies a year at least. I'm like the Sharpie king.
I believe that, but you've passed that down in the family because when Courtney comes in to work with me at NBC Sports Washington, I know when Courtney's there because I come walking down the hall, I can smell Sharpies all over the place.
Yeah, like father, like daughter, that's for sure. It just makes it easier for me to stand up because I like to stand up during games, not necessarily sit the whole time, and I can quickly look down. And when you get over 60, fellas, your eyes start to go a little bit. Well, this allows me to have the sharpness and I can quickly pick up a note here and there.
So that's interesting to me. And Craig Lachlan is with us. We're jacked up. He'll be with us all season long. He is the absolute best. And he's joining us on Grant and Danny. You say you stand up during games. When I call games, I love to stand. I can't really sit. But you having played, I'd imagine you got different hip and leg and knee things from all the contact. It's not painful for you to stand for those like 3-4 hours a night?
It was, and I couldn't about 5 years ago until I had my hips both done. I couldn't even walk up the steps of a plane. I had to go one leg at a time. Ever since I got these new hips, everything's been great. I can do everything that I've always wanted to do. I can skate now. I can do all the things, including standing, for as long as I want. I like standing because then I'm not focused on the monitor or my notes. I'm actually seeing the plays develop. It's just an easier situation for me.
So let's get into the club here. The boys obviously have had such a wonderful season. A couple losses here or there I think was bound to happen, Locker. But as you're watching the play here, what have you seen for this last, I'd say 4, 5, 6 games or so where it just hasn't quite looked the same as it did for the first few months? What are you seeing?
Well, let's start from the goal on out. Poor goaltending. Braden hasn't been himself. It seems like, you know, Braden had a tough start. A great middle, and now he's back into the real poor part of his season. You know, in his last three or four games, he has not been the Braden Holtby that we saw maybe in the early parts and late parts of December. All of a sudden now, he's just missing shots. Even last game, he probably would tell you that he wanted two or at least maybe even three back of the 40 the Islanders scored. That, number one. Number two, I think you look at the power play, guys. It's not been powerful. I mean, it's like 16 or 17%. Plus, they've been getting scored a ton on in the first period. So you add all those things up. This is a common thing and a theme that I even had when I played. It's sort of like you get through the holidays. You're looking forward to the family to be in town, your friends. It's Christmas. It's New Year's. It's all the holidays. And all of a sudden now, it's sort of the doldrums of the season, unfortunately. But if you're in the doldrums too long, what happens is the teams that you've been way ahead of, a.k.a. Pittsburgh, all of a sudden now they're nipping at your heels because they keep to winning. But they will go through a doldrum state too. I just find now there's too many misses on the Caps. You know, Ovi's not playing great. Braden's not playing great. You go down the list of guys that aren't playing great, and all of a sudden this is the type of season you expect. And the time of year is generally right around now where teams go into a little bit of a funk.
Craig Lachlan on Grant and Danny. The Caps have a comfortable lead for people kind of casually tracking this to let them know about the Metro. 6 points over the Isles, who have played two fewer games, and then 6 points over the Penguins and 9 points over Carolina, who they play tonight, although the Hurricanes, like Columbus, seem to have their number and be a real pain-in-the-butt pest for them. But of those teams, now the Penguins have been rolling without Crosby, but now they lose Jake Guentzel for the rest of the year, who's their leading goal scorer. The Islanders with Barry Trotz play great defense. Of the Isles, Pens, Hurricanes, who do you think would worry you the most in terms of giving the Caps a run for their money in the second half of the season here?
I would go Canes 1, Pittsburgh 2. I think when you look at Carolina, the problem the Caps have against Carolina, and they're even talking about it today and yesterday, is the fact that Carolina's first forward in and second forward are so aggressive that the D don't have a millisecond to make a decision. That's going to be key tonight. They've got to think tonight that the glass is their friend. They've got to get the puck and get it off the glass and have foot races instead of trying to make sweet passes coming out of the zone. That's where Carolina will kill you. I will say this about Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh has impressed me because they've done what they've done through a rash of injuries that I don't think any other team could have done. Now they're getting Crosby back. Malkin's playing like Malkin. Jerry has stepped in goal and has played unbelievable, much like a lot of guys that get their first taste of the NHL. All of a sudden, he's a star. And to me, that's a team I worry about. We haven't even played them yet. That's the scary part. And you're talking the Metro. You're talking the Metro, and all of a sudden, Grant, this Caps team, numbers-wise, is very mediocre. So to me, this stretch of games coming up can really extend their lead, or it's going to bring everybody into the fold, including Columbus, including Carolina, and Pittsburgh. So this stretch here is critical for the Caps.
Craig Lachlan with us, not only today, but for the rest of the season, postseason. As long as the Caps are playing, we'll have Locker on the program. Locker, obviously probably the easy answer here is John Carlson, but maybe let's narrow it down to some of the younger guys, right? Thinking, you know, first, second, third year players, et cetera. Who's impressed you the most on this Caps roster? Who do you think they need more from going forward?
Well, let's start. Vron has impressed me, but you've got to live with his inconsistencies. To me, he's a player that's going to be a star for this team. He's going to score 30 to 40, I think, in the future because of his skill set. I think he's just inconsistent. Some games, he's blazing. Other games, you know, you don't really see a whole lot of Jake Vrana. I think he's been a real solid player. I think guys that have to get better, I would start at Kempney. I'm not sure he's fully recovered from his injuries. He's not playing like the Kempney that we saw in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Ponick, they were looking for more goals from him. I think he's got four now, but he's a top third line guy. He's top three lines. He's got to produce more. I think when you look at the fourth line, it's as good as it gets. Even Trotz told me the other night, he said, when I was talking to him before the game, he says, "Oh my God, Locker, this fourth line reminds me so much like our fourth line, the best fourth line in hockey." And he thinks, obviously, they modeled it after that line in the Island. I wouldn't be surprised with Leipzig, Hathaway, and Dowd. And I think that Jonas Siegenthaler, guys, is going to be a star that no one really talks about. I think we take Siegenthaler for granted, but when you look at his numbers, leading the team in penalty-killing minutes, using his reach, and I think I'm seeing a little more snarl in his game because that's the big thing. You know, all throughout the history of the NHL, you see a big guy, you always say, oh, he's going to play tougher. He's a little soft. He doesn't really crush guys. Well, I think that part of the game's coming for Siegs, and that's why I think he's been a real godsend considering the defensive core this season.
7:30 puck drop in Carolina tonight for the Caps and the Canes. The game will be on NBC Sports Washington. 6:30 pregame coverage starting with Faceoff Live. That's the show I'll be on, and you'll see Locker and Players Only in that show as well. Craig, are you going to outdress Joe B tonight?
You can't ever do that, but I will. I have a meeting with Joe every day, and I've got one coming up here right after our show here just to remind him that the fans want to hear me, not him.
Tell him we said hello, all right, Locker?
What a line. That's awesome.
All right, boys. I'm glad to be on board with you guys. We are going to have a ton of fun, and we are going to break down the Caps in the NHL big time.
Yes, we will. Love it. Can't wait. There's Craig Lachlan. Show got better with our announcement today.
He's the best.
That he'll be joining us. Presented by American Standard Heating and Air. Find your local contractor at midatlanticcomfort.com. We're G&D. You are listening to The Fan. It is Friday, which means, I think, winning off the field. Bruce Allen is gone.
We need to have a conversation.
We need to have a show meeting about
this. We gotta figure this out. We'll do it live.
Next.
We'll do it live!
If I've gotten this question once since Bruce Allen was fired, I've gotten it 100 times. What's going to happen with winning off the field?
It's very flattering. It's nice. It's kind.
Does it stay? Does it go? Do you have to get rid of it? Because really, winning off the field began and lived throughout its entire life during the Bruce Allen era as an ode to one of Bruce's greatest hits. We did it not for you and not for me and not for the listeners, as we said so many times, but we did it for Goose Allen. So does winning off the field stay or does it go? That's the question on Grant and Danny.
At the end of the day, is it part of the fabric of the show or was it specifically about Bruce? Just to really and truly, at the end of the day, it was nice to celebrate small things with our listeners and with ourselves and Brandon and Thom and anybody who participated. But it really, at the end of the day, was about making fun of Bruce and making fun of the Redskins for employing Bruce for all that time. I think it started, this is my take. I'm not speaking for the show here. I'm just thinking.
No, this is Danny Rowler.
Well, this is my opinion, not his. I think it started making fun of Bruce, but I think it grew. I think it grew to become a fabric of the show.
Danny Rowler.
Thank you very much. I think this is who we are.
Yeah.
And I think it's not just about Bruce. We do it in honor of Bruce, but it's more than that. I think it stays. That's my take.
You're voting for stay.
I vote for stay.
Okay. Thom, you are in so many ways the arbiter of winning off the field.
The architect.
You know, the culture is actually damn good.
It's a great opportunity for you to dip into the sound machine and fire off some of the great clips that we have. It was, in fact, your original idea to provide winning off the field for the masses. How do you feel on January 3rd, 2020 with Bruce Allen now gone?
This is going to come as a shock to you guys. But I am going to vote to retire winning off the field.
Wow.
And
wow.
The reason why is because, sure, we put other jokes in it, and it became convoluted along the way. But we can't miss what the mission was, which was to remind all the listeners of what was going on at Redskins Park and who was running the Redskins organization at the time besides Dan Snyder. That problem has been taken care of. 10 years it took to get there. It took us 5 years of doing winning off the field to get to this point.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to start fresh with Ron Rivera, the Rivera era, as some are saying. And I'm going to vote to retire winning off the field.
Wow.
All right.
I did not have that in the office poll, to be honest with you.
I didn't either. By the way, one thing we could do is we could get rid of winning off the field and we could just call it Thanksgiving Day. And then you call in and say what you're thankful for. That could be the new thing. And it's the exact same segment where Thom plays random clips and people just call in and say what they're thankful for today. And it is exactly the same as winning off the field.
That's absolutely ludicrous.
Run back about 50 foot.
Dar, what's your thought on the matter?
I've wanted to retire it for 4.5 years now.
You have. It's fun, and so Dar hates it.
Wow.
No.
Is this a no fun Dar bit?
It is fun.
It involves work, so he wants to retire it.
That's a good line, actually.
It is fun if people got it, but somehow 5 years in, people still, I'd say 70% don't get it.
Dude, people get it.
Well, he deals with the calls of the people who don't, I guess.
Okay.
But there are certainly enough people who do. I want to keep it going as well. I think it's very important that we do.
So we're tied at two. What do we do?
Well, it's a good question.
Do we go to the boss? Like how the Rivera era is going, all the coaches are at a standstill. You have to go to the owner. So would we have to go to CK for this?
Waddle down the hall and see if CK is meeting with one of like the 82 shows that he now runs.
Looks like a meeting when I walk by.
I would say that until there's a new GM, it should probably keep going because he was, in theory, the GM.
Bruce was.
I think it gets a stay of execution until there's a new GM.
So you're saying we don't have to decide right now. That's interesting.
I mean, it's either like it's Bruce is out.
I thought this was the GM.
Soak over it and, you know, look at each other. And
he is kind of a GM. He likes to soak over it and look at each other. I mean, I'll say this for what it's worth. I'll post a Twitter poll so we get a better idea. But I really do think, I mean, the masses
look at what I'm doing right now.
Spoken.
Dead serious. Setting up the poll.
The masses have spoken on this for days. They want it to stay.
Soak over it.
Why would we get rid of something the people want? Let's go to Rich and Olney, who's always the first man in for winning off the field. Richard. Hello, Rich.
What's going on, guys? You know where my vote is.
And a good day to you, sir.
Well, I know I do the right ones here, so Dar can't possibly be mad at me. But you guys both all know I work in retail. We are officially out of the retail season. I can get back to normal people. Therefore, I am.
Winning off the field.
Thank you, pal.
So he's still doing it. Right?
He's just carrying the torch.
He's just
forward.
Doing it.
I mean, we asked him, do you want to keep it or not? And he's just pushing forward with winning off the field. Interesting turn of events.
He literally just did it and pointed at center field.
The listeners have spoken.
Yeah,
I think it's important that we keep doing it and that our show, in some ways, it is a staple.
It is.
It is synonymous with the program. If we actually had merchandise or T-shirts like they did when radio was cool, that would be probably what's on our T-shirt.
We would do that.
It's a thing people know for the show. There's two things more than anything else when people acknowledge that I'm on the show or come up to me or whatever over the years that they have said the most. The first was, what are you eating, which we got rid of. I still think we should be doing what are you eating, but what with us trying to live healthier lifestyles, it was difficult.
It was harder, yeah.
The second is winning off the field. I think it'd be a mistake to get rid of two of the things we are most known for as a radio show.
What if we moved on to Thanksgiving and just did the same thing with... I like your idea about that, by the way.
The happy Thanksgiving idea?
You call in and give thanks for what you're thankful for, and it has to be small.
I don't think it's broken. I don't think we have to fix
it. That's
a
good point.
But if you wanted to tweak it, we could just call it, hey, it's Friday, it's 11:45, it's time for Happy Thanksgiving, and then everyone calls in and tells us what they're thankful for.
Every day is Thanksgiving.
Every day is Thanksgiving. Our boss, Chris Kiner, joins us in studio. So we're debating this. Both of our producers want to get rid of it. Danny and I would like to keep it. What do you think?
I think we keep it. I think winning off the field lasts forever because it's the little things in life, right? That Bruce Allen is no longer here. We're all winning off the field.
And by the way, it's not like they're about to start winning on the field overnight either.
That's correct.
Yeah. We're still going to have to add up these off-field wins to get us by for the next couple of years.
Do you agree with me in the sense that it started as one thing, but it grew into something else? It became our thing as much as it was initially just about mocking Bruce.
Yeah, you took everyone's sadness and you turned it into a positive, and I think you should be commended for that.
Mm.
All we want to do is make the people happy. It should matter, too, that, like, legit dozens of people since the firing are like, you guys have to keep winning off the field. Now, there might be some guy somewhere who hates it who doesn't want it. Mm-hmm. But I think, by and large, the people who care about our show and like our show, they want to hear it more and more. Now, most of the junky staples over the years that I grew up with are not allowed to be done anymore.
Yes, that's correct.
My favorite junkies.
They still do horrible, right?
No, you are very right about that. They were not doing the Daisy Dukes contest where bags are put over women's heads. That's not happening anymore.
They're not doing that.
No.
There are a lot of things they did about, I don't know, 12 to 15 years ago during my heyday that I would love to hear that apparently you've just told them they can't do anymore.
Welcome to cancel culture. Okay?
Right. However, I don't think there's anything about this that we need to get rid of because of cancel culture.
No. No, this is a positive. This is people sharing what makes their day good, you know, what made them happy today. And you were there for the original press conference. You were part of that.
I was.
That was a big deal.
That was a fun time. That was one of the best days.
It's still so wild.
What a blast. How many meetings have you had today, by the way?
There's a lot of meetings. We should probably put that whole press conference like online somewhere for people to just relive. 100%.
I don't know if I ever did text you or not. The day Bruce got fired, I thought we should have aired that entire thing. That press conference is so, it turned the entire town's opinion on that guy into, how is this possible? This is utterly unacceptable.
Like this is it?
This is the guy? And from that point forward, essentially, I think the momentum was, Bruce's time was done.
Yeah, the hourglass, it turned very slowly, and the sand was trickling at a alarmingly slow rate. But yes, it was basically a matter of time until that guy got
canned. Some of the national guys that come on, like Garofalo and those guys, still reference, like Lockenfora within the last 2 weeks, reference that press conference as like an all-time, just what you don't do in PR.
A debacle.
Just letting that guy out to dry, and then the amount of vitriol and anger. It was incredible to be in that room.
Well, luckily they learned their lesson, and he had great press conferences from then on for the next 5 years.
In that he had none of them, basically.
Oh, except for the bad ones where he said they were a damn good culture.
When he spoke, he did crazy things. So you're saying, and your vote, I would say, is the most powerful, that winning off the field stays.
I think we all went off the field.
All
if
right.
It stays.
3-2.
Except for Thom.
But and Dar. Dar's won it either.
Well, Dar's negative. We know that. Very dismissive.
Five-star
Dar. I actually had a real reason for why I wanted it to retire with Bruce Allen. Dar just wanted to take the segment off.
I also said it should stay until there's a new GM.
He did come back and say that. Well, we appreciate the votes, and if you want to tweet us, you can. You got the poll up.
I have a poll up,
First respondents in. What do we got?
It is very close to 50-50, I will
You're
say.
You're kidding.
54 and change to 45
me.
And change.
Stuns
the responses that are people instead of voting on the poll are actually responding to me, which is really annoying, but I like your opinion.
People voting on the poll could all be muted by you for
entirely
despising
possible.
You.
Entirely possible, which you don't know. But everybody that's responding is saying, no, Bruce is gone, it should be gone.
Ooh.
Which is fascinating. Again, it's really hard to get a pulse of the people.
It's tough. But as of right now, it stays, and we'll run it back next Friday.
You got to post your poll, too. We got different samples. We'll figure it out.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. The Beltway Blitz next at noon and at 12:18. Ron Rivera, Dwayne Haskins. What did he say? What do we take away from his thoughts on the QB? Coming up on the Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.